The English got a bit old-fashioned, so someone wrote a modern version in modern English. William Penn wrote this book, The Peace of Europe and the Fruits of Solitude, and other writings, but one of the things he does is more or less advocate what we now know as the United Nations, some council of the nations. The Journal of George Fox, which was written after the event, as it were, so you don't necessarily trust it for exact historical detail. If you know, if you wrote a history of your life, you might beautify it a bit or simplify it a bit. And this other book is the diary of Samuel Pepys. Now, Samuel Pepys was, first of all, Secretary of the Navy, responsible for the supply of, you know, planks and ropes and tar and all the sailcloth, all those sort of things. And later, he became Secretary to the Admiralty, which meant he was concerned with recording all the promotions and so on, re-employment of sailors and all the conditions to do with them. The point of mentioning Samuel Pepys was that there was a little set of houses at Deptford, I think it was called, where the Navy had all these establishments, and so one of the neighbours of Samuel Pepys were the Penn family, and so you get some insight into the Penns from... by the way, Samuel Pepys had wrote it all in code, so he didn't expect anyone to ever read it. But I think it was a couple of hundred years later, someone got hold of this thing and they deciphered it from his shorthand code, and it's full of all sorts of interesting, maybe salacious things about his... After his wife died, he had affairs with various mistresses, and it's all down there, not for anyone to read, but in shorthand, where he thought no one would ever see it. But that's by the way. Let me start to deal with Samuel Penn. William Penn, sorry. William Penn was a son of a William Penn. The father was a sailor who rose through the ranks in the Navy from common sailor to admiral. Appointed to the commission of the Navy, given a house at Deptford, where he was a neighbour of Samuel Pepys. Pepys, in turn, was... Oh, I said all this. Secretary of the Navy, responsible for naval supplies, and Pepys wrote a diary in shorthand code, which was deciphered later and published. Young William Penn was sent down from Oxford University for nonconformity. Exactly what that meant, I suppose it meant he, instead of attending the Anglican chapel, he sneaked off to, I don't know, a Baptist church. We don't know. William Penn was sent abroad to France to study. He became a skilled fencer, you know, with a fencing sword. Returned in 1664 with modish apparel. That was, you know, fashionable dress and a dress sword and so on. He was a student at Lincoln's Inn. That's a law, studied law, from 64 and 65. He served under Lord Arran to suppress mutiny at Carrickfergus, offered a company of foot, but his father refused him permission to to do that. He was converted to the Religious Society of Friends, that is the Quakers, by hearing a sermon of Thomas Lowe, L-O-E, in Ireland. during a Quaker street worship meeting, was arrested for tumultuous assembly, was excused for his rank in society, but he insisted on going to jail with the rest. With his son a Quaker, his father, which was a disreputable thing to happen, with his son a Quaker, his father, the Admiral, lost his chance of a peerage. William returned home but refused to remove his hat to his father or any of higher rank than himself. This is the Quaker testimony to equality. He adopted Quaker dress, which was plain working man's clothing rather than what the rich people wore. He asked George Fox, founder of the Religious Society of Friends, if he should continue to wear his sword, and was told, "Wear it as long as thou canst." In 1668, he wrote, "A sandy foundation's shaken, and no cross, no crown." Expelled from home in 1669, he wrote a book called Innocency with Her Open Face, which I haven't read or even had a precy of. In 1670, together with William Mead, he was imprisoned for street preaching. His father paid the fine, and the father and son were reconciled. In 1673, he rescued George Fox from imprisonment in Worcester Castle. The king owed his father £16,000, which, you know, which the king didn't have. So the king paid the son, the father having died meanwhile, in land in what became Pennsylvania and part of New Jersey. They did a land swap at some stage. Pennsylvania, the original land grant went to the ocean, and for some reason they, which had a funny corridor to the ocean, and they did a land swap somehow so that New Jersey got all the coast and Pennsylvania got some compensatory land somewhere.
So, John, can I just clarify, are we in America or are we in England?
We've gone to America. The king he gave him the land, and Penn went there. And he went there with colonists who were mainly members of the Religious Society of Friends. But since he adopted a colony of religious toleration, it wasn't long before people came in from all over, and it was no longer the predominant religion. In fact, if you go to Pennsylvania now, you'll find that the Mennonites outnumber the Quakers greatly. There's a lot of Mennonites there, including the Amish, which are old-fashioned Mennonites, and so they get, they're the people who won't use motor cars and use horses and so on. But there are many other Mennonites who move with the times, and they just wear ordinary dress and use motor cars and so on, which people forget. The next bit of paper that turns up here is what I can remember or piece together of the testimonies, as they were called, of the Religious Society of Friends. They refused to fight with outward weapons, became conscientious objectors in time of war, and opposed the death penalty. Brotherhood. They believed in the equality of all persons, racial equality, refused to give hat honour to those of superior rank, do not recognise titles given by inheritance or custom, do not ordain ministers or priests. I've conducted a Quaker funeral service, for example. That was by request of the husband of the lady, actually. We didn't know any connection, but she had asked the Quakers to conduct her funeral, which is a very simple funeral in which all present are asked if they have anything to say about the grace of God in the departed. Simplicity. They refused the plural you given to persons of higher rank, but insisted on the then common plain singular, thee and thou. Magistrates often took offence and fined or imprisoned Quakers for this. They wore plain clothes and refused ornamented garments or to follow fashion. In extreme cases, isolated rural America, this led to Quakers wearing clothes no longer in general use. For example, the man in quaint old-fashioned uniform on a Quaker oats packet, if you've ever seen that man. But that was a refusal to follow fashion, of course. You end up dressing in something that is centuries old. Elizabeth Fry married a rich man. Her daughters conformed to the teaching of plain dresses. They didn't have any ornaments on them and frills and things, but they had them made of the most expensive material. Truth. Quaker testimony was to always speak truthfully. Refused to swear oaths, implying possible untruth if an oath wasn't sworn. You know, they were often imprisoned for refusing to give oaths when in court. And until solemn declarations were accepted by the courts, that was a problem for them. The justification for not swearing oaths is Matthew chapter 5, 34 to 37. Do not swear at all. Let what you say be simple yes and no, etc. Before shops displayed tickets showing the price, apparently they did in the early days, Quaker shopkeepers had one price for everyone, which was contrary to the then practice of charging rich people more. And they were teetotal. They didn't use alcoholic drinks. They practiced what some people said was silent worship, but that's not unsilent worship because people would speak. Not necessarily. If people felt led, they would speak after an appropriate silence so people could take in what any previous speaker had said. But do I need my glasses for this? I thought that this might be relevant. It's a poem written by John Greenleaf Whittier. I think he's written some hymns. In calm and cool and silence, once again, I find my old accustomed place among my brethren, where, perchance, no human tongue shall utter words, where never hymn is sung, nor deep-toned organ blown, nor censer swung, nor dim light falling through the pictured pane. There, syllabled by silence, let me hear the still small voice which reached the prophet's ear. Read in my heart a still diviner lore than Israel's leader on his table saw. There let me strive with each besetting sin, recall my wandering fancies and restrain the sore disquiet of a restless brain. And, as the path of duty is made plain, may grace be given that I may walk therein. Not like the hireling for his selfish gain with backward glances and reluctant tread, making a merit of his coward dread, but cheerful in the light around me thrown, walking as one to pleasant service led, doing God's will as if it were my own, yet trusting not in mine, but in his strength alone. Now, did I mention before that William Penn was tried for street preaching in the street? John Bunyan, we had How to Be a Pilgrim was a John Bunyan, comes out of Pilgrim's Progress, someone put it to music. But he was in trouble for preaching in the street too. I seem to remember that when he was imprisoned, his main worry was not being imprisoned, but he had a blind daughter that he was worried about. But anyhow, I'm distracting myself. This is a shortened version, I've cut bits out, of the trial of William Penn and William Meade. Oh, and it says who's present. I don't think I'll read that, but the form of the oath. You shall well and truly try and true deliverance make betwixt our sovereign lord the king and the prisoners at the bar, according to your evidence, so help you God. That William Penn, gentleman, and William Meade, late of London, linen draper, with other persons to the number of 300, the 14th day of August, about 11 of the clock in the forenoon, in Gracechurch Street, did unlawfully and tumultuously assemble and congregate themselves together to the disturbance of the peace of the said Lord the King. What say you, William Penn and William Meade? Are you guilty or not guilty? Penn, it is impossible that we should be able to remember the indictment verbatim, and therefore we desire a copy of it. Recorder, you must first plead to the indictment before you can have a copy of it. Penn, I plead not guilty. Clerk, what sayest thou, William Meade? Art thou guilty or not guilty? Meade, I plead not guilty. The court adjourned. The 3rd of September, 1670, the court sat. Mayor, sirrah, who bid you put off their hats? Put on their hats again. They knew that the Quakers didn't take their hats off to superior beings, you see, so the Quakers cunningly came in with their hats off. But the magistrate, he knew this, so he had their hats put back on. Whereupon one of the officers, putting the prisoners' hats on their heads, brought them to the bar. Recorder, do you know where you are? Yes. Do you know it is the King's Court? I know it to be a court, and I suppose it to be the King's Court. Do you not know there is respect due to the court? Yes. Why do you not pay it then? I do so. Why do you not pull your hat off then? Penn, because I do not believe that it to be any respect. Recorder, well, the court sets 40 marks apiece on your heads as a fine for your contempt of the court. Penn, I desire it might be observed that we came into the court with our hats off, that is, taken off. And if they have been put on since, it was by the order of the bench. And therefore, not we, but the bench should be fined. Meade, am I fined also? Recorder, yes. Meade, I desire the jury and all people to take notice of this injustice of the recorder, who spake to me to pull off my hat, and yet hath put a fine upon my head. The clerk read the indictment. Clerk. Crier, call J. James Cook into the court, give him his oath. Cook. I was sent for from the exchange to go and disperse a meeting in Christchurch Street, where I saw Mr. Penn speaking to the people. But I could not hear what he said because of the noise. I endeavoured to make my way to take him, but could not get to him for the crowd of people, upon which Captain Mead came to me about the colonel of the street and desired me to let him go on, for when he had done, he would bring Mr. Penn to me. Court, what number do you think might be there? Cook, about 300 or 400 people. Reed, being sworn, was asked, what do you know concerning the prisoners at the bar? Reed, my lord, I went to Gracechurch Street where I saw a great crowd of people and I heard Mr. Penn preach to them and I saw Captain Mead speaking to Lieutenant Cook, but what he said I could not tell. What did William Penn say? There was such a great noise I could not tell what he said. Mead, jury, observe this evidence. He saith he heard him preach and yet faith he doth not know what he said. Jury, take note. He swears now a clean contrary thing to what he swore in Gracechurch Street and yet swore before the mayor that he did not see me there. I appeal to the mayor himself if this not be true. But no answer was given. What number do you think might be there? About 400 or 500. My lord, I saw a great number of people and Mr. Penn, I suppose, was speaking. I see him make a motion with his hands and heard some noise, but could not understand what he said. But for Captain Mead, I did not see him there. Penn, we confess ourselves to be so far from recanting or declining to vindicate the assembling of ourselves to preach, pray and worship the eternal, holy, just God, that we declare to all the world that we do believe it our indispensable duty to meet incessantly upon so good an account, nor shall all the powers of the earth be able to divert us from reverencing and adoring our God who made it. You are not here for worshipping God, but for breaking the law. You do yourselves a great deal of wrong in going on in that discourse. Penn, I affirm I have broken no law. I desire you would let me know by what law you prosecute me and upon what law you ground my indictment. Upon the common law. Where is the common law? You must not think I am able to run up so many years and over so many adjudged cases that we call common law to answer your curiosity. This answer, I am very sure, is short of my question. For if it be common, it should not be so hard to produce. Recorder, sir, will you plead to your indictment? Penn, shall I plead to an indictment that hath no foundation in law? If it contain that law you say I have broken, why should you decline to produce that law? Since it will be impossible for the jury to determine or agree to bring in their verdict, have not the law produced by which they should measure the truth of this indictment and guilt or contrary of my fact? Recorder, you are a saucy fellow. Speak to the indictment. Penn, I say again, unless you show me and the people the law you ground your indictment upon, I shall take it for granted your proceedings are merely arbitrary. Recorder, the question is whether you are guilty of this indictment. Penn, the question is not whether I'm guilty of this indictment, but whether the indictment be legal. It is too general and imperfect an answer to say it is a common law, unless we know where and what it is. For where there is no law, there is no transgression. And that law which is not in being is so far from being common law that it is no law at all. Recorder, you are an impertinent fellow. Will you teach the court what law is? Penn, I have asked but one question, and you have not answered me, though the rights and privileges of every Englishman be concerned in it. Recorder, if I should suffer you to ask questions till tomorrow morning, you would never be the wiser. That is according as the answers are. Sir, we must not stand here to hear you talk all night. Pen, I desire no affront to the court, but to be heard in my just plea. Recorder, take him away, Lord. Take him away. My Lord, if you take not some course with this pestilent fellow to stop his mouth, we shall not be able to do anything tonight. Mayor, take him away, take him away. Put him into the bail dock. Pen, these are but so many vain exclamations. Is this justice or true judgment? Must I therefore be taken away because I plead to the fundamental laws of England? Be silent there. I am not to be silent in a case where I am so much concerned, and not only myself, but many 10,000 families beside. Observer, they having rudely hailed Penn into the bail dock, William Mead they left in court, and he spoke as follows. You men of the jury, here I do now stand to answer an indictment against me, which is a bundle of stuff, full of lies and falsehoods. I ask for an oyer, I think that means the words, of the law in which our indictment is grounded. Recorder, I've made answer to that already. Mead, turning his face to the jury, said, you men of the jury, who are my judges, if the recorder will not tell you what makes a riot, a rout, or an unlawful assembly, Lord Cook tells us, a riot is when three or more are met together to beat a man, or to enter forcibly into another man's land, to cut down his grass, his woods, or break down his press. Recorder, I look upon you to be an enemy to the laws of England, which ought to be observed and kept, nor are you worthy of such privileges as others are. Mead, the Lord is judge between me and thee in this matter. Upon which they took away him away into the bail dock, and the recorder proceeded to give the jury their charge as follows. You have heard what the indictment is. It is for preaching to the people and drawing a tumultuous company after them, and that Mr. Mead did allow of it. After this you have heard by substantial witnesses what was said against them. The prisoners were put out of the court into the bail dock, and the charge given to the jury in their absence, which Penn, with a very raised voice, being a considerable distance from the bench, spake. Penn, I appeal to the jury, who are judges, and this great assembly, the proceedings of the court are not most arbitrary and void of all law. In offering to give the jury their charge in the absence of the prisoners, I say it is directly opposite to and destructive of the undoubted right of every English prisoner. Observer, the recorder, being thus unexpectedly lashed for his extrajudicial procedure, said with an enraged smile, why, ye are present, do you hear, do you not? Penn, no thanks to the court that commanded me into the bail dock, and you of the jury take notice that I have not been heard, neither can you legally depart the court before I have been fully heard. Recorder, pull that fellow down, pull him down, take him away into the hole. To hear them talk all night as they would, that I think doth not become the house of the court, and I think you, the jury, yourselves would be tired out and most and not have patience to hear them. The jury commanded up to agree upon their verdict, the prisoners remaining in the stinking hole. I don't know why it was a stinking hole, presumably because no toilet facilities, but I don't know. After an hour and a half's time, eight came down, but four remained above the court. The court sent an officer to them, and they accordingly came down. The bench used many unworthy threats to the four that dissented, and the recorder, addressing himself to Bushell, said, sir, you are the cause of this disturbance and equally manifest yourself an abater of fraction. I shall set a mark upon you, sir. Observer, silence was called for and the jury called by their names. Are you agreed upon your verdict? Yes. Who shall speak for you? Our foreman. look upon the prisoners at the bar. How say you? Is William Penn guilty or not guilty? Foreman, guilty of speaking in Gracechurch Street. Is that all? That is all I have in commission. You had as good say nothing. Was it an unlawful assembly? You mean he was speaking to a tumult of people there? My lord, this is all I had in commission. Record, the law of England will not allow you to part till you have given your verdict. Jury, we have given our verdict and we can give no other. Recorder, gentlemen, you have not given your verdict and you had as good say nothing. Therefore go and consider it once more that we may make an end of this troublesome business. Jury, we desire we may have pen, ink and paper. Observer, the court adjourned for half an hour, which being expired, the court returns and the jury not long after. The prisoners were brought to the bar and the jury's names called over. Clerk, are you agreed on your verdict? Yes. Who shall speak for you? Our foreman. What say you? Look upon the prisoners. Is William Penn guilty or not guilty? Foreman, here is our verdict, holding forth a piece of paper to the clerk of the court. We, the jurors, hereafter named, do find William Penn to be guilty of speaking or preaching to an assembly met together in Gracechurch Street, the 14th of August last 1670, and that William Mead is not guilty of the said indictment, signed by all the jury. Recorder, gentlemen, you shall not be dismissed till we have a verdict that the court will accept, and you shall be locked up without meat, drink, fire, or tobacco, fire presumably important in England in the winter. You shall not think thus to abuse the court. We will have a verdict by the help of God, or you shall starve for it. Penn, my jury, who are my judges, ought not to be thus menaced. Their verdict should be free and not compelled. The bench ought to wait upon them, but not forestall them. I do desire that justice may be done me and that the arbitrary resolves of the bench may not be made the measure of a jury's verdict. Recorder, stop that prating fellow's mouth or put him out of court. May, you have heard that he preached, that he gathered a company of tumultuous people and they do not only disobey the martial law but civil also. Penn, it is a great mistake. We did not make the tumult, but they that interrupted us did. The jury cannot be so ignorant as to think that we met there with a design to disturb the civil peace, since first we were by force of arms kept out of our lawful meeting house and met as near it in the street as their soldiers would give us leave. And secondly, because it was no new thing, nor with the circumstances expired in the indictment, but what was usual and customary with us, it is very well known that we are a peaceable people and cannot offer violence to any man. The court being ready to break up and willing to huddle the prisoners to their jail and the jury to their chamber, Penn spoke as follows. The agreement of 12 men is a verdict in law, and such a one being given by the jury, I require the clerk of the peace to record it, as he will answer it at his peril. And if the jury bring in another verdict, contrary to this, I affirm they are perjured men in law. And looking upon the jury, he said, you are Englishmen, mind your privilege, give not away your right. One of the jurymen pleaded indisposition of body and therefore desired to be dismissed. The mayor, you are as strong as any of them. Starve with them and hold your principles. Recorder, gentlemen, you must be contented with your hard fate. Let your patience overcome it, for the court is resolved to have a verdict, and that before you can be dismissed. Jury, we are agreed, we are agreed, we are agreed. The court swore several persons to keep the jury all night without meat, drink, fire or any other accommodation. They had not so much as a chamber pot, though desired, the court adjourns till 7 o'clock next morning, at which time the prisoners were brought to the bar, the jury called to bring their verdict, the jury's names called over. Are you all agreed on your verdict? Yes. Who shall speak for you? Our foreman. Look upon the prisoners. What say you? Is William Penn guilty of the matter whereof he stands indicted or not guilty? Foreman. Here is our verdict in writing and our hands subscribed. Observer. The clerk took the paper but was stopped by the recorder from reading it, and he commanded to ask for a positive verdict. Foreman. That is our verdict. We have subscribed to it. Clerk. How say you? Is William Penn guilty or not guilty? Foreman. Not guilty. Clerk. How say you? Is William Mead guilty or not guilty? Foreman. Not guilty. Clerk. Then hearken to your verdict. You say that William Penn is not guilty, and you say William Mead is not guilty, as he stands indicted, and so you say all? Yes, we do so. Recorder. I am sorry, gentlemen. You have followed your own judgments and opinions rather than the good and wholesome advice which was given you. For this the court fines you 40 marks a man and imprisonment until paid. At which Penn stepped towards the bench. Penn, I demand my liberty, being freed by the jury. The mayor, no, you're in for your fines. For contempt of court. Penn, I ask if it be according to the fundamental laws of England that any Englishman should be fined or immersed but by the judgment of his peers or jury, since it is expressly contradicts the 14th and 29th chapter of the Great Charter of England, which say, no free man ought to be immersed but by the oath of good and lawful men of the vicinage. Recorder, take him away. Take him away, take him out of the court. Penn, I can never urge the fundamental laws of England, but you cry, take him away, take him away. Observer, they hailed the prisoner into the bail dock and from thence sent them to Newgate for non-payment of their fines. And so were the jury. He imprisoned the jury as well. Now, just an addendum to this. This was appealed and went to the High Court, and the High Court eventually made a ruling that juries were not allowed to be threatened by judges.